We've been talking about the true meaning of Christmas all month. What is this meaning? We talked about the virgin birth. What does that mean? What is that about? We talked about myth and we talked about metaphor all around the birth of Jesus. But here's the thing. If we stay there, if we stay at the birth, then we eat baby food spiritually for the rest of our lives. And the metaphor of Jesus extends much further than that. How can we carry it into our lives? How can we carry it as we grow spiritually, as we grow to adulthood, as we grow and as we gradually or quickly, however it may turn out to be, lose our lives? Because, yeah, Jesus, our brother, did come for to die, but you know, all of us came for to die. The moment we're born, that is our one guarantee, is that we will die one day. And I love to look at Jesus as a window. I don't think he ever intended to be worshipped. As a matter of fact, he went out of his way to say, "Don't call me good. It's what's in me that's good. It's the Spirit within. It's the Father within. And you have the same thing in you." He said it over and over again. But you know what? That's hard. It's a lot easier to say, "Only you can be good, and I'll just sit over here and do what I want to." And it's a lot harder to say, "Oh, if I have that within me, if I have that divine spark, then how can I learn to act from that, to speak from that, to think from that, to make that deep truth in me come out into the world," just as in the prayer of the Franciscans. How can I live from that deep place? How can I live from that deep place? It's not easy. And so I just want to kind of briefly actually run through Jesus' life. He was born. We've been talking a lot about that. And there's very, very, very little written about what he did as a child. There's one main story that's usually done at Epiphany that is about him, his family going to Jerusalem for the Passover feast. And you know, this was when families were, you know, 67 people all traveling together to Jerusalem. And they got, the family finished the Passover feast, and they got halfway home, and they were like, "Has anybody seen Jesus?" And no one had. They finally figured it out. Went all the way back to Jerusalem and found him in the temple talking to the priests. So there's that one indication, metaphorically, historically, mythically, I think mythically is the most important thing, that he was very interested even from a young age. He was said to be about 12 then. 12 is the age of, I know for me, it was very much the age of going, "Oh, wait a minute. If I want to be something in the world, I have to do that. No one's going to do it for me. No one's going to give it to me. It's not going to just happen. I have to do something." And that was the age that he was at that time. So there was that interest. And then there's nothing really else spoken about him until the beginning of his ministry. And so Jesus' life, the beginning of his ministry, the beginning of his spiritual maturation, which is what we're all hoping for, it starts with a call. It starts with a calling. The first impulse. The first time something higher and bigger than ourselves really gets our attention. So Jesus had that calling, I think, at 12, maybe even before then. I know that I had that calling at 12. At 12, I woke up and went, "Wow." And the religion that I was in, what that meant to me was that I need to go and be baptized. And Jesus did the same thing. Now, I no longer believe in that sort of, that I need that sort of baptism, but once again, it's a beautiful, beautiful symbol. And the cool thing about Jesus, when he got the calling as an adult, he didn't go to the priests. He didn't go to the Pharisees. He didn't go to the temple. Where did he go? He went out into the woods in search of a wild and crazy hippie guy named John the Baptist, who was wandering in the woods with wild hair, with barely dressed, and eating locusts and honey. for his meals. And Jesus came to him for his baptism. Now think about that. What that means to me, what that means for me and you, I think, metaphorically, is that if we think we can just follow someone else's path, if we think we can go to conventional religion and read the book and follow the instructions and get enlightened, probably not going to work. We have to risk. We have to go outside of the bounds of convention to find the truth for ourselves. We have to get out of the way other people tell us things have to be done and find the truth for ourselves. Now, maybe the truth we will find is that the other people who talked to us were right. But we can't take it on their say. We have to know for ourselves. And this is what Jesus did. And John the Baptist, who really was a wild man, y'all, had been baptizing people. And he said, I'm baptizing people for the repentance of sins. That sounds kind of horrible. But what it is that he's saying is, have you ever reached a point in your life where you think, I'm just too far gone? It's too late to start over. I have too much baggage. Well, symbolically, the baptism that John did was to say, come on, we're going to lay down your baggage. We're going to put you in this stream, and when you come out, baggage isn't yours anymore. You get to start fresh, brand new, put away everything that's happened before. And you know what? Do we know this? I mean, even in psychology, we know that dragging our baggage with us from the past ruins our present and our future. And it's only when we're able to go, okay, that is the past. I'm not going to deny it, but I'm going to let it go. And I'm going to go forward. Let it go. So John baptized so that people could let go of the past and move forward. But he said, he who comes after me will baptize you with the Holy Spirit and with fire, not just with water. And not just to let your past go. What John was saying was that Jesus is going to come and he's going to be full of the Spirit. He's going to be not the person who says, let me help you leave your baggage behind so you can go forward. He's going to be the one that goes forward and says, come on, and pulls you through. I got the Spirit. Come on. Let me show it to you. Let me show it to you. So there is that awakening. So there's a calling, and then there's an awakening to who and what we are here to do. John brings us to the border. Jesus pulls us across. And us, most of us don't want to risk awakening to the new until we're forced out of the old. Sometimes, every once in a while, I believe there must be some people somewhere who go, you know what? I want a better life. Not pain. Nothing's really bothering me. It's all pretty comfortable here. But I think I want something better. And then they go on a spiritual quest. But I think most of the time it is like, the water is starting to boil. And if I stay in here one more minute, I'm going to die. So I've got to get out. And we stay in the water as it's reaching boiling temperature for a long time. Because safer to stay in this hot water that we know than to jump out and risk something that we don't know. Because the truth is, when we decide that everything is new, when we take that risk, we begin to live our lives looking through new eyes, from a new perspective, when we let go of the baggage of the past, we're bound to disappoint the people around us who are used to us being a certain way. And when everything is new, that means everything is new. That means you may lose some of what you have in order to gain what it is that you want. And I've had this happen over and over in life. And you know what? It's okay. It's what living is. It's what living is. So we can begin to awaken to the new when we're forced out of the old. And that force can be something physical, like an addiction, like a broken relationship, or it can be something entirely in our own minds, like just despair, absolute despair. And then a day of going, I don't want to die, and I don't want to live like this. So there's got to be something else. And we do that. We do that. And I think we have many of these awakenings in our lives. And it's really easy to fall back asleep. Once we get to a new place where it's kind of comfortable, it's like, okay, I had my awakening. This is great. Woo! Spirit works. And often we do fall back asleep. But here's what happened for Jesus, and here's what I know happens for us. Almost immediately when he said, okay, I'm going to go out in the world and tell this good news of who I am and who you are too. Then he went off actually to spend some time alone, to look inside himself. And he went out into the desert and he fasted for 40 days and 40 nights. Well, that 40 days and 40 nights isn't necessarily literal. That pretty much in general, in any kind of mythology and throughout the Bible, 40 means however long it takes to get it done. So he stayed there until he really, really firmly had his awakening. And at the end of that, Satan come along and he says, hey, aren't you hungry? Just turn these stones to bread. You can eat right now if you'll worship me. And Jesus is like, no. And that is our test. Our test sometimes feels like survival. Like, oh, maybe I will ignore what I know to be the truth because I need this thing. Or we can go, no. I believe the truth so strongly that I believe that I will survive without the thing, that I'll be brought what I need without having to compromise my vision, my integrity. When I say integrity, think of the word integration, to integrate your spiritual life into your daily life so that it's not a Sunday thing. Jesus says no, and then the second test comes along. The second test is for when Satan says, hey, why don't you show off? You could just jump, I mean, we're on this mountain, you could just jump off and fly. Prove it. If you're so awesome, prove it. You got all that? Come on, show me. And Jesus, and I love this. This is what I want to be. This is what I am at moments of time. I want to know who I am so much that I don't have to tell anybody about it. And that's what Jesus basically said is, yes, I could. And I don't have to show you that. I don't have to show anybody that. I know so firmly who I am that nothing that happens out here matters at all. I don't need to prove it. I don't even need to say it. I'm just going to live being who I am. And then finally, the temptation of power. If you will worship me, you will rule the whole world. Everything can be yours. Every single thing can be yours. All the power, all the money, all the women, all the whatever. And that's when Jesus said, get behind me. Go on. I'm done with you. And what I want to say is, when we tell this story, it sounds like easy. Of course, he's Jesus. So he's like, no, I'm good. But these temptations are real. These temptations happen to us in life every day. Like, I feel like I should say something, but it's going to really, really rock the boat. And maybe it'll be just easier to go along and just ignore whatever this thing is that's not right. Hearing friends make a racist joke. Well, you know, it's probably not going to do any good to say something to them. And it'll just make them mad. And, you know, then we leave the situation and we feel kind of icky. Like, oh, where did my integrity go? To stand up and say, that's offensive to me. Think about what you're saying. It doesn't work for me. And that's just one example that popped into my head. You know, you get out to the car and you realize, oops, that that pack of batteries was buried under the toilet paper and it didn't show up, they didn't ever read it on the thing. Do you take it back inside and pay for the batteries, or do you go, oh, well, their mistake? I mean, I don't know. I can't determine that for you. It's not about moralism. It's about what is right for you, and are you willing to stand and act and speak and be what is right for you, regardless of the circumstances of the world? It's not easy. Now, in Buddhism, the same thing happened. When Buddha awakened from under the Bodhi tree, Mara came to tempt him. Mara, this goddess of temptation. And the cool thing about Buddhism is that Mara is not personal. It's just, it's an energy. When we make it personal, Satan, that's a personal challenge. But it's the same thing, y'all. There is no person of Satan. There's an energy of you have a choice at every moment. Do you make the choice that resonates with who you are and who you've decided to be? Or do you make the choice that is most expedient or that gives you what you want, that rocks the boat the least, that makes you look best in the eyes of other people? Or do you stand in yourself? It's not about what's right or wrong. It's about, are you aligned with your own spiritual reality? And after the temptation, the fourth stage in awakening, really using this as a metaphor, Jesus' life metaphor for ours, is this abiding tranquility. Now, I believe that that's what it's called in the Eastern philosophy. For Jesus, it was, he knew who he was. It didn't mean that he didn't get annoyed with people. It meant that underneath all of that annoyance, he wasn't truly disturbed because he knew who he was. And a lot of what he did was trying to teach. Now, one of the things that happens in Eastern philosophy is that once you have awakening, once you live beyond your temptations and you come to that place, you gather people around you to be your students. And Jesus did that. The disciples were like the insiders. Like, I'm going to teach in parables, but you guys are going to get to know what it really means. Only they didn't get it. They never got it. And Jesus tried to teach it to them over and over, and he got annoyed with them. He got annoyed with other people that they didn't get what he was trying to say. And eventually, I think what happened is he went, oh, my teaching is not about giving you the information. My teaching is not about convincing you. My teaching is about living my truth. And then you can watch that, and you can decide that's what you want to do, or you can decide something else. It's up to you. It's not up to me. I've done all I can. Now I can live at peace. The next stage is transfiguration, the relinquishment of ego, becoming the oneness. In Jesus' life, he got to the point where it's like, I'm just going to live this. Which is how, as he was preparing to be crucified, as he knew it was coming, maybe he didn't know exactly, but he had a pretty good idea. It's like, politically, things are not going well. And usually when people rock the boat to this degree and get suddenly from, oh, we're on everybody's good side to now we're on everybody's bad side, then, you know, there are dire consequences. I would rather not have those dire consequences. He said that in the Garden of Gethsemane. He said, let this pass from me. I don't want to do this. And yet, what he knew was that I am who I am. I am what I am. I am that I am. And so whatever happens is maybe painful, I may hate it, but I'm going to stand in the truth that I know. I'm going to stand in the truth that I know, which is why he was able to stand in front of Pontius Pilate and not even defend himself. They were like, are you king of the Jews? Is that what you've been spreading around? And he's like, you say I am. I didn't say that. That was his whole, he are making up their whole thing. Gosh, would this world be better if we could, instead of going directly into defense or another offense, if we could just go, yeah, I must know what's really happening, and stand there in our own truth. Finally, the other guy may not have anything left to do. So this idea of being one, of laying down the ego, of actually like going, no, that's not who I am. I am one. I'm one with the Spirit within me. And then the final transfiguration was, of course, his death. He came to die. He came to die. And that symbolizes for us not necessarily our death, because we can die and never get to that place. And we can live and get to that place. It is the death of the ego. It is the moment when we really realize not just, I'm going to put my ego in the back seat and drive with Spirit. It's the day that I go, ain't no ego. I truly am one with all. I don't have anything holding me back from my oneness. And I don't know, maybe we can't live in this world once we reach that level of knowing. I don't know if the Dalai Lama says he sees, he feels like he's had a moment here and there of that. He doesn't live it. And he's as close to abiding tranquility as I've ever seen. But here's the deal. When the ego dies, there is a resurrection. When we experience the death of the ego, all of the terror, because it's hard to let go of your ego. Your ego is there. That's the devil right there. That's Satan telling you, you're not going to survive this. It's going to be worse than you think it is. Nope, 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 nope. Don't change. Don't. Don't kick me out. I'm your best hope. The ego lies. When people say Satan lies, yes, your ego lies to you. That's all Satan is or ever was. The part of you that wants to lie to yourself. But once you let go to that degree, there is always a resurrection. Always a resurrection. Always. And the reason I say this is not just because Jesus did it. I believe that there is some historical truth to whatever happened. Somebody saw something. They're still talking about it 2,000 years later. How did that happen? I don't know. I know the Apostle Paul says the resurrection body is going to be different from the body that you live in. And you know, so it makes sense that something really major happened. People saw something that changed them after Jesus had been dead for 3 days. They became convinced that his spirit at least lived on, that there was an eternity that was not able to be killed by anything on this earth. And when we experience deaths of the ego, it doesn't, I don't know if any of us is going to experience the death of the whole ego, but you've had parts of your ego that were just dead. I have. I've had ones that were like squished down, and then they were crumbled, and then they were beat on, and then finally they were just flat as, they were just dead, just gone, flat as a pancake. I can no longer pretend in any way that this thing is okay anymore. My ego has gone away from that particular subject. It's not going to happen again as long as I continue to stay awake to the best of my ability day after day. So that's the death of the ego, not maybe the ultimate death, but all of the little deaths. The day that you go, you know what? I am no longer ever, ever going to take pleasure in anyone else's pain. You probably think you've never done that, maybe. Schadenfreude. It's like, oh, he had it coming. Woo! You can die to that part of yourself. You can let that go and realize that everybody's joy is joy and let it be your own. You can die to jealousy. You can die to an assumption of wrong on other people's part. You can awaken to the benefit of the doubt for all. These are all possibilities for us, and this is what Jesus did in his life. The metaphor, the myth of Jesus follows this metaphor. It follows the myths of other heroic journeys, and it can be our journey if we choose to take it up. The Jesus story is our story, and it's not necessarily linear for us. We can go from stage to stage to stage, but we get to be truly who we are and live from that place. And that is eternal and abiding joy, as far as I can figure out. That is the joy of Christmas and how to make it last. I love you. Thank you. So we're going to take that into meditation. So just, if you will, relax. Take a deep breath. Just to bring you into the present. Give yourself the gift of being nowhere else but here for a moment. Obscure that truth. The voices in your head, they tell you that you're being judged and found lacking in every moment. The voices outside you in the world. Outside have no say unless you agree. So let them judge. And know that we don't have to join in with the judgment. it's not that we will then go out and lead immoral lives because we're not judging ourselves anymore. It's that when we stand in the truth of who we are, when we really know, we will have no temptation to do anything outside of integrity with who we are. And when we forget who we are, oops, forgot. Now I remember. I am. I don't have to defend or judge the forgetting. I came to earth. Maybe the reason I'm here is to live in this body that constantly falls asleep so that I can constantly wake it up. In this mind that constantly sees through a glass darkly, so that deeper truth in me can constantly then say, no. I don't have to look through the eyes of the world. I can look through the eyes of I am. Breathe once more into that defenselessness. Because I am.